Hey team, Richard Tubb here with another episode of Tubb Talk, the podcast for managed service providers. I'm joined today by Erik Uslud Folkerid, who is the go-to market lead for Microsoft AI at PAX 8 EMEA. Now, that means that Erik leads the business around Copilot and other AI services at PAX 8, making sure that MSPs like yourself have what you need to help companies across Europe get into AI and to reap the benefits. Now, Erik, as we'll find out more about, Erik has worked in commercial AI and SaaS roles at multiple organizations, from ISV startups to international corporations, including Microsoft. And I know he's passionate about customer-centric sales and marketing, as well as data-driven growth hacking and experimentation. So this should be a fascinating conversation. Erik, welcome to Tub Talk.
Thank you so much, Richard. Happy to be here.
Oh, wonderful to speak to you. I've got to address the elephants in the room straight away. I visited Stockholm before. I've met with the Swedish MSP community, but my Swedish is fairly poor. How have I done with pronouncing your surname?
I'm very impressed, Richard. You did really well. I usually tell people Ostland is perfectly fine. I have made it as difficult for non-Swedish speakers as I possibly could. So well played.
Well, I was telling you just before I came on air, I reached out to a Norwegian friend, rather a Swedish friend, and I said, can you help me out with that? And he helped give me a sort of a pronunciation guide. So I'm glad I did all right there.
Probably sounded much happier than my name usually does. Norwegian does tend to do that. Enough stereotypes. We'll be dealing with enough misconceptions today, I'm sure.
Exactly. Yeah, well, there we go. I'm intrigued, actually. I should have maybe put your surname through AI and said, tell me how to pronounce that. I missed a trick there, but we can talk more about that as we go forward. Let's jump straight in. You joined PAX 8 just a few months ago. So indeed. Tell us what brought you to this role. Are you excited about it?
Well, you'd kind of have to be made of stone to not be excited to work around AI every single day with how things are going right now, right? But yeah, indeed. As you mentioned, I have worked at Microsoft previously. So my role there, the one that I was most excited about, was an AI recruit. So getting more partners to join us and become AI partners further on. And that was before we had Copilot. So it was a much more abstract kind of conversation to have with people. We didn't have sort of that tangible thing that everybody could relate to. I mean, in some ways, it's kind of like, I would maybe liken it more to like giving people a box of unsorted Legos versus giving somebody a pre-built toy with like an instruction manual. So when the opportunity for this came around, I was like, well, I have to apply for this. And I'm not going to gush too much about it, but like it's probably been like the most transparent like interaction I've had with a company. And so it's like, okay, these guys are onto something. I hadn't heard of them before. They did not exist in Sweden where I'm at. While I was still sort of working with the channel at the time. So jumped on it, and it's been a hell of a ride so far. We shall see. I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, like, we have had I'm going to say at least half a dozen people from PAX 8 on this podcast. And I sometimes get listeners get in touch and say, man, you feature PAX 8 a lot. And I'm like, they make it so easy because they're such an exciting, transparent company to work for in my experience, people I've spoken to. But, you know, you are the latest in a long line of just awesome human beings that PAX 8 seem to attract to working with them. So, you know, give us an insight. You know, PAX 8 wasn't there in Sweden so much, wasn't much of a presence. What attracted you to working with the company?
Well, I think it was sort of like from the get-go trying to do things. It seemed pretty apparent from the beginning that I was trying to do things a bit differently. I mean, just in terms of like every single interaction I had was very transparent, very open to feedback, and just kind of cards on the table. And I would like to think that's still carried on. And I try to sort of carry that forward in my discussions with MSPs and with our partners as well. It's like, I mean, look, we're not here to play games. Like, I'm just going to tell you how it is. I mean, if that's going to benefit everybody in the long run. So it was kind of refreshing in that sense, that, and just kind of like the the ambitions being set really high and really betting on AI. Obviously, I mean, everybody's saying they're betting on AI right now. You'd be silly not to. But really putting your money where your mouth is in that sense, it meant that, like, okay, let's see where this goes.
I'm fascinated. You know, I keep an eye on the business of IT as well, obviously. But I looked, you know, Microsoft's revenues were up, your former employer, they were up for the first quarter of this year. And I think most analysts looking at it, and maybe even Microsoft themselves, will say a lot of that is due to the, you know, their focus on AI, Copilot, those type of things. So I'm intrigued from your perspective, how do you see, not really the trickle down effect, but how do you see the opportunity around AI for managed service providers, those people who are at the coalface doing it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I mentioned that, like, in my previous, like, AI roles, I've been sort of very much focused on more like the ISV sort of side of things. So, like, building your own stuff. When I worked at startups, it was a SaaS startup and so on. But now with AI being made available in more of a, I would say, an MSP friendly format, it's really cool to see what you can do with this beyond just selling a product. Because you could go to a customer and say, like, hey, here is this cool new toy. It does these things. You'll love it. Or you could enter into more of an interesting discussion about, okay, well, what outcomes do you want to get out of AI? And you don't need to be necessarily as concerned with, are these immediately attainable by the exact features of this exact product, because you're starting a conversation. So I think sort of getting into the business of providing outcomes, and ideally, like, so some of the best MSPs out there are already doing this for other, like, other workloads and such. Like, no, we sell peace of mind, we sell productivity, we sell, like, future proofing, all of these other things that decision makers and users care about. But with AI, it's quite clear that you're only going to get so far by just listing off a list of features and saying, like, this is what it does, because that's just really scratching the surface. The truth of it is, like, if you were to list that, you would have a never-ending list of bullet points, because nobody has yet discovered the full extent of what even pre-built stuff like Copilot can do at this current stage.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I like to do on this show is not assume the knowledge of anything. So let's rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
For anybody who's unfamiliar with Microsoft Copilot, so how would you describe it to an MSP, somebody perhaps who is not familiar with Copilot? And I know many of our listeners will, but I'm really intrigued. How do you describe it from scratch to somebody who doesn't know what Copilot is?
I might get in trouble for saying this. If I have one sentence to say, or like 2 seconds or something to say, it's ChatGPT, but it's safe and usable for your work, which is obviously way too reductive. If I have a bit more time, I would say, like, on its surface, it's adding generative AI. So most of us at this point have at least some surface awareness of what generative AI is. So again, kind of like weeding out the misconceptions of what we're talking about here. We're not talking about Skynet, not yet.
Not yet.
more so thinking, okay, well, you probably know what ChatGPT is. So it's adding that. It's adding the ability to generate new content, to connect things together, to pull information together and serve it up to you into every interaction you have in Microsoft products. And it's sort of hooking in to be able to do things inside of those products or those services as well. So it can actually add stuff. It can create content for you. It can have a lot of features beyond just what you would typically associate with ChatGPT. And especially, I mean, looking forwards, I was deeply absorbed in all of the stuff coming out of Build now. It's like we might see an expansion of that pretty soon, potentially with being more like, oh, it's a team member or it's an agent. But at the moment, like, it's probably good to think of it as like, hey, you have sort of a junior assistant. Everybody can have a junior assistant available to them that can either offload you or complete tasks, or just sort of augment what you are doing, add more information, make you a more well-rounded professional.
Yeah, I like that approach. And Pascal Fintoni is one of my colleagues here, our content strategist. We did a lunch and learn on AI recently, and Pascal describes the two levels of AI. Looks at as like, on one hand, you've got the intern or the junior, as you might call it, and that is like, we know the information exists out on the internet. Go away, complete this, maybe do a bit of the heavy lifting. But you've also got the consultant, haven't you? Where it's, I've started using, you know, ChatGPT, Copilot, things like that, more of a consultant asking it big questions. You know, I'm going into this sales meeting, what approach do you recommend? Then asking it follow-up questions and things like that. So it's a fascinating time, isn't it? And it's much more than just like a magic wand to get things done, isn't it? There's some real, you know, interesting thinking going on there.
You know, like what I'm telling people now in all of my like trainings and workshops that I do is like, it's best to not think of this as something that has been designed or made to do certain things. Everybody's sort of discovering the use cases for this as we go along. So you're going to have to sort of go on a bit of an exploration yourself and find like, okay, what can this do? Rather than like, oh, here's a book of prompts. You can like just follow this book and you will get value out of it. Or such. More so like, hey, like treating this kind of, again, like as an assistant, somebody who's not maybe super experienced, but like, hey, I can with a clean conscience tell this person to redo their work or go back and revisit and just revise or just regenerate what I asked them to do, and then I'll get something good or something different out of it.
I've got to ask as well, Eric, do you speak very politely to Copilot, or do you just
have been so that's sort of an interesting thing, right? Because I genuinely have seen difference, and this is probably not, I mean, looking at it rationally, it's probably not the politeness itself, but small differences in your prompting are going to have a big difference on the output. So sometimes I will put a please in there, or I will say, can you, and it will sometimes give me something different. It sort of comes down to that sort of non-deterministic side of things, doesn't it? I suppose it doesn't hurt, right? I mean, if there is sort of a generalized sort of, let's looking at it rationally again, this is not general AI, this is a large language model. However, any interactions with this, we are adding to sort of how we interact with these kinds of technology.
So. I think so. I've had this conversation with a few different people, and I think, you know, for me, I'm really polite with my prompts and things. And I think you can look at it one of two ways from my perspective. Either Mrs. Tubb brought her baby boy up really well, and so he speaks very well to anybody. Or secondly, you talked about maybe, jokingly, the singularity, the future of Skynet and everything. Well, I want to be the first one when they look at the transcripts and go, Richard was very kind to us, therefore, as we take over humanity, we're going to be kind to him as well.
Richard's one of the good ones. He's okay, guys. He's okay.
So all joking aside, so Copilot, I think the majority of our listeners, that's going to be one of their, being Microsoft partners, most MSPs are, it's going to be an entry point to AI.
Yes.
What are some of the common challenges, though, Eric, that MSPs might face with integrating AI tools like Copilot in with their existing services? Any advice for overcoming those challenges?
I'd be lying if I said there weren't challenges around this. I mean, first off, this sort of came, I'm not going to say it came out of nowhere, but it did sort of arrive on the scene very quickly for a lot of MSPs. And we are seeing a lot of, I mean, it's probably, honestly, from my experience, it's probably the most customer-driven product, that, or at least product category that I've encountered personally, in terms of customers reaching out. So like, hey, how do we use this thing? And how can we get started with this? And that sort of, if you have this approach where you want to be the trusted expert who knows everything about the technology before you deploy something, that can be a challenge. So sort of for how to deal with that is going to be a thing, but it's a huge opportunity as well, because I mean, hey, it's an embarrassment of riches when customers are coming to you and it's like, oh, we'd like to get into this. The fact of the matter is, we don't have, like, there is no, I was going to say there's no playbook. There's plenty of playbooks, but those playbooks are not based on years of experience with this exact product in this exact category. Nobody has the answer sheet. However, having sort of a basic approach of how to go about this and embracing the uncertainty and say, okay, well, we will help you along with this, is going to help with that. I think another challenge I'm seeing is that, especially in a lot of the marketing and stuff coming out of like how Microsoft is positioning this, it's being sort of pigeonholed a lot of the time into a time-saving tool. And I mean, anybody's worked with like an IT department at a client or such, because they're like, well, it's going to be sort of a discussion around cost. And it's going to be a discussion about, like, okay, well, this is a cost-saving tool because it's saving time and they're saving cost. From the successful use cases that I've seen and the successful implementations and the successful sort of discussions around this, you really benefit about elevating the conversation above that a bit as well and thinking, oh, well, yes, time saving, obviously it's important. Obviously, that's going to be a really good thing because it's fairly easy to measure in comparison to a lot of other things. But we have things like, how can you improve quality? Mm. But that's a more like nebulous thing, right? Like what does quality mean? So it's going to vary based off of what your role is. But if you're a salesperson, if you can be more prepared, if you can be more engaged when you're talking to clients or prospects, if you are able to have more information on hand, if you're able to provide things that feel more custom and find ways of measuring that, that is kind of where I think the real brunt of the value of this is going to be, because it also sort of opens up more conversations for you as an MSP. I'm not talking to certain roles about using this to save costs, maybe bringing other people into the conversation and talking about this as a way to increase revenue, increase sales, increase NPS or customer satisfaction or whatever metrics that person cares about most. Yeah. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but that's some of the challenges that I've seen and how I would maybe go about.
You absolutely did answer the question, Eric. And I think anecdotally, I'm hearing from MSPs, this is one of the rare occasions where MSPs are, challenged is the wrong word, they are getting approached by their clients saying, how can I do this stuff? Yeah. Where normally it's the other way around, isn't it? Where, you know, MSPs go to their clients and say, hey, here's something shiny and new. Did you know about it? No, I didn't. Well, let us explain to you. So I think MSPs, I'm not going to say they've been caught on the back foot, but I've been banging the drum about AI in the, you know, for managed service providers for years and years. And it seems to have been a reasonably slow uptake. But thanks to Microsoft, ChatGPT and others, people, SMBs, are actually going out there, adopting AI, getting the surface level of going and understanding now, oh, there's more can be done. Who do we turn to? Then the MSPs are being approached and saying, right, can we help? So do you see, you know, the managed service provider market sort of changing a little bit from that traditional role of, oh, we're the IT guys, we fix stuff? Is this an opportunity for MSPs to go, okay, we can be your consultants and help you understand how technology can transform your business?
You know, I think so. I think that's kind of where the core of this opportunity lies, right? Because we could providing support around this, even if you are thinking around more of like, okay, well, we fix things. Even if you say like, no, well, this is my comfort zone, I'm staying inside of it. Even that is going to look drastically different to what people are used to, because the way you interact with this is so different. I do think that pretty much everyone's going to have to expand their comfort zones a little bit here. And like, what sort of services have we typically provided? A lot of us have been very technical in terms of what sort of services and value-added things we provided to our clients. But in this case, it might be less technical and more maybe practice driving. Because, I mean, like we went over, like experimentation, discovering things. Like, it's more, if you have the good practices for doing that and sticking with it, when you use a tool like Copilot, you're going to get a lot more out of it. And that's sort of where, if you can encourage that, if I'm going to boil it down, I usually like to say, like, if it's one thing you want to take with you, it's like, think of this as like learning a language, learning your skill. A lot of us will remember, like, hey, when we started using search engines, like there's some tricks you can use of how you can find it. And lately, it's more so like, hey, if I need to search for something, I just like add Reddit or something to the end of it, and that'll typically get me better results. similarly to this, it's like, well, you're going to have to learn something new. And that's similar to just like learning a language. You're going to have to immerse yourself and stick with it and make sure you actually practice to actually get the most out of it. Otherwise, you're stuck at kind of that, like, oh, well, I know the theory about this, but when it comes to actually using it, I'm a bit clueless.
Yeah, it's almost... I've reflected on this, and there's almost something of a pattern interrupts there, where normally you might jump to Google or Bing, of course, to find things. But now that interrupts to say, before I do that, let me insert the AI in there and say, right, what would it look like if I asked Copilot about this, or crafted a prompt for Copilot in there? So it is a change in almost culture and mindset, isn't it? Yeah. In terms of how we can use AI, because as you've alluded to a couple of times, the possibilities here are really infinite.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Like, how do you deal with infinite possibility? It's the same as like giving somebody a blank sheet of paper. It's like, oh, we'll create. Go out and create. So like, how do we deal with something that's non-deterministic, that doesn't have like a manual in terms of like, oh, do this? I mean, you can start off with some examples, but you kind of need to deal with that unpredictability or that, like, I mean, it's kind of the whole point of why we have generative AI, right? Mm-hmm. So if it was completely deterministic, it wouldn't be AI. It wouldn't be flexible to the point where we could use it for the things we're using it for right now. So yeah, I think that's going to be a major factor. One more thing I'm running into as well, and this comes up in like, I think every single, at least customer, like end customer interaction I have, is like, obviously going to have people who have some, like a lot of misconceptions about what this is. Like, oh, like, is this learning? Is it learning from what I do? Does it adapt? Will it take my job? It's never explicitly mentioned, but it's like, hey, will Copilot take my job? But it is implied. Quite often. So yeah. I'm finding I need to go into discussions of like, well, let's rationalize this a little bit, because I do think like we can joke about it, but at the same time there is kind of a serious side to this of like things are going to change. Like we're going to see a sort of gradual shift as with like every technology, when you go from a typewriter to a word processor, when you have any ability for people to do more, things change. And that's where I keep coming back to that thing of like, don't, even as a user, don't limit this to just being a time saver. Don't limit this to just being an efficiency maker. Like, this is something that I think we can all kind of do, even as individual employees, of like, if you're concerned about AI being used as a justification for reducing your job, like, use it not just to make yourself more efficient, use it to make yourself more effective.
Yes.
And get better stuff done, to highlight the fact that, oh, look, I did this. I used AI to do this. AI could not have done what, like, it was me plus AI that made this possible, just like me plus these tools made this possible.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of MSPs who are listening to this show, Eric, and their Microsoft partners. The majority are. They're aware of Copilot. They've seen Microsoft talking about Copilot. But I'm a great believer in that old phrase, eat your own dog food. Yeah. Or maybe the French might say, drink your own champagne, which is
a bit nicer, right? Yeah, I prefer that. Let's go with the French version.
But the point is, of course, that we shouldn't be telling clients, do as I say, don't, you know, do as I do, not do as I say, sort of thing. But instead saying, like, we are using this internally. Here's how we use it. So from that perspective, for those MSPs who are listening and perhaps are aware of Copilot, but haven't done a great deal with it, how can they eat their own dog food? How can they start using that internally, treating themselves as a client? Where would you suggest they begin?
Well, that's a really good point. I mean, if I hadn't used Copilot myself, I wouldn't be very credible in talking to this, especially in terms of talking and showing this to end users. I mean, it's always been the case, right? If you have used something yourself, you are going to do a better job at selling or providing support around that thing. And it just, you start having more productive conversations with people when you can say like, oh, that, speaking of which, the other day I noticed the follow button came up in my Outlook. So now I'm able to follow meetings that I can't attend. Have you seen this? And that's a, like sharing and spreading that enthusiasm helps a lot. But yeah, in terms of starting it yourself, I think, I mean, it's not realistic, just as we don't really expect any SMB out there to go out and buy a license for every single person in their organization sight unseen. You're going to have to sort of start with what roles it works for, or you think it's going to work for, and really kind of go about the same sort of adoption journey, if you will, as you would expect your customers to do. It's kind of what we're doing at Pax8 right now, is we're kind of in that sort of verifying stage of like, okay, well, how have things gone so far and what have we found out? But I'm telling pretty much every MSP out there, it's like, hey, if you're going to take one practice with you, it's like build a pilot program around this that has a little bit of structure, whatever you can feel you can muster in terms of structure, but do something where you're saying, okay, well, here is a framework for you to get started as a client, as an organization with this. But you can try that out on your own, or rather like inside of your own team or your own company as well. It's like, well, we're going to try this out. We're going to try out Prompt Buddy, for example, which is a pretty cool app that that's free that you can install in Teams, and it sort of acts as your prompt database. So like one of those things, like, well, we're trying that out ourselves right now. I was able to adapt that to Pax8 roles. It means that you can also sort of run into your own sticking points, such as like, oh, well, getting people involved and making sure they show up to our co-pilot coffees that we have is maybe a thing. So, hey, how do we make sure that we encourage end customers to do that? So it's a lot of building practices, kind of, and you can try out those practices yourself. And indeed, you probably should.
Co-pilot coffees. I picked up on that. I mentioned Lunch and Learns, which we use internally at Team Tub. I used to, when I ran on my MSP, we used to have Lunch and Learns with clients. So co-pilot coffees, is that a Pax8 thing? Is it a Microsoft thing? Tell us more.
It's just sort of like, hey, it worked out. It's called it AI coffees first. And then it's like, well, it's co-pilot coffees kind of rolls off the tongue a bit better. But I mean, the point being, you want to have sort of a low stakes occasion to share ideas, like, hey, I did this cool thing, and sort of propagating that outwards. It's I'm at the risk of spinning off into a side tangent about growth hacking here, because that's sort of my passion area. But like, I'll spare you the long-winded one, but sort of run through of it. But it's sort of applying experimentation and A/B testing and sort of some practices from software development into a practice of like, well, we let's build ideas, let's ideate. Doesn't really matter if they're the most like realistic or feasible ideas. So in the context of Copilot, it's like, well, here's an idea. What if I could use Copilot to do this? And then we go about testing that and experimenting with it, and then we share the insights of whether that worked or not. And if it didn't work, then that is as useful to us as if it did work. Because if you succeed on the first try, you haven't really learned much beyond the fact that, okay, well, this worked in this specific situation, but I don't know much more detail.
Right.
So being hungry for insight into this and being willing to experiment and prod at things a bit. So trying to like encourage that is something that I would be lying if I said that we are doing this rigorously at Pax8 right now. But it is the kind of approach that I think is going to be really crucial for ending up with a model and a sort of framework that works for you and your organization, because we're all different. Right, like our teams work differently, like our data that we have access to is different, the things we do and what's important to us is going to be different. So like setting that up, and even like if you're not going to have workshops or structure things around that, then at least have a thing once a week or bi-weekly where you just meet up. It's like, here's a cool thing I did, have you found any cool stuff?
Yeah, fostering that culture of experimentation and going there, because I think most of us as MSPs, we not only love technology for the most part, I'm a massive geek, you know, always love technology. That's what got good at doing it. But we love helping people as well. And the majority of people in the managed service industry, I find they do like helping people. And so this is a great opportunity, isn't it? To, like, first of all, help yourself, experiment, cultivate that culture, but then share what you've learned with clients. And that's where you can get them on board, showing them real world stuff, how you're doing stuff. Definitely. So I know Pax8 has produced a lot of supporting resources for both MSPs and prospective clients or their clients as well. So can you give us some insights into some of the tools you've got? So I come across, I think it was the AI cost calculator, readiness quizzes. Tell us more about those things, Eric.
Yeah, so I mean, one of the first initial questions you will run into with this, and with like a lot of products, let's be real, is like, oh, what does this cost? And then you start getting all of the objections tied to that. The cost or the ROI calculator is kind of a way to make it really simple, like on the fly, without knowing necessarily all of the maths to do it. You can just kind of like feed the numbers in. So you can just pull this up if you're in a meeting. So like, oh, well, what is, like, looking at the sort of users you envisioned would use this, what's their average salary? And so you feed that in, and then based off of insights from the early access program, which is honestly maybe a little bit like conservative at this stage because the feature set's improved so much since then, but it's going to do some calculations based off that. Like, well, if we go with time saved, here is how much time would be saved per month, and this is how long it would take for you to break even on cost, based purely on comparing the cost of the license versus the cost of the hours that are saved by the person using it in this case. So that kind of way of dealing with that objection, I think, is probably going to be pretty helpful. Again, not stopping there. Because if you just leave the conversation there, it's like, okay, cool. Yes, we've broken even on cost, and then we save more cost over time. It's like, that's scratching the surface. I challenge you to go a bit deeper than that. Use that as a jumping off point. It's like, well, a good follow-up question would be after that. It's like, how would your people use that time, though? So like, hey, we've already calculated here that we can estimate they're going to save about, let's say, 10 hours a month. Like, if this team collectively had like 50 hours a month more to spend on something, what would they do? And if you get certain answers, you can start bringing it into, like, well, could they, like, what metrics are important to you? Like, what are your goals for that team? Or what are your goals as an organization? Like, what do you want to improve? And how could you then make that maybe a part of that team's goals or what they're measured on if and when they achieve this outcome? So ROI helps in that case. Then we have assessments that help out in terms of quizzes, like helping get the conversation started. It can help if you don't know, but I would still encourage you to use those as a jumping off point. Like, they're not a replacement really for, I would say, I mean, it sort of comes down to having a discovery session with your client, and not everyone's going to be comfortable necessarily or used to having those conversations. I wasn't when I got into customer experience design, but like the one tip I got from that, from my coaches and teachers, that was like, just ask why a bunch. So like, use these tools as jumping off points, and ask your client or whoever is sitting across the table or across the meeting. It's like, what do you think about this? And whatever they say, just ask why. And then drill down, and you will find gold somewhere deep down in that conversation. Like, be prepared to ask why up to 5 times. Like, tell me more about why you think that's the case. Like, have them disclose a bit more, and then you are sort of starting to get into those more like interesting conversations. I think they're more interesting, at least, than based purely off, well, what IT tools do you need today?
I'm so excited about the potential here. So, you know, I sold my MSP business 12, 13 years ago. Hmm. And I remember evangelizing at the time about, I was like, the industry is changing. We need to move away from being the IT guys towards being advisors, consultants, business process, those type of things. I see AI, I don't know if you agree with me or not, Eric, but I see AI as almost like now some guardrails for MSPs, taking them down that road of saying, look, it's not enough to just do the tech. We need to be asking why, how can we help our clients to do things faster, better, and cheaper? and asking them some real deep business questions.
Yeah, I mean, like, now is the time, right? Like, yeah. if you have been waiting to, I don't want to say the phrase, it was old, it felt like it was old hat even when I was worked at Microsoft many, many years ago, but like becoming that trusted advisor,
yes,
or aiming for that, it is a very worn out term, but like it has never been more relevant at the same time now, because if you are going to help your customers actually get real world value out of AI, you kind of need to aspire at least to become that person or that role, and that does open up a whole load of doors for you, even in terms of what people you talk about, or at least even if it's the same people at the organization because they wear a lot of hats. It's like, well, what topics are even on the agenda when we meet, or like what topics do you even, what would you even consider thinking of before we have a meeting, compared to like comparing if you were working purely in tech, purely on features, purely on solving IT needs versus actually understanding what that business does, what's important to them, what their challenges are, and having at least a jumping off point of like, hey, AI could maybe help you with this. What do you think about
it? And talking of excitement for AI, obviously you and I are very excited about AI, but the most passionate man in the world is my friend and your colleague, Philip Morgan. And when we talk about excitement, I can't tell you the amount of times that I've spoken to Philip. You know, he and I have just been having conversations as friends about AI. The man is an absolute evangelist for us. He said it changed his life in terms of productivity. He's given me dozens of examples of where it helps him, you know, with meetings and other things. In terms of, you know, that type of evangelism, that type of excitement around AI, what are you seeing? How has AI changed your life, Eric? What are you using it for on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to compare my day-to-day to the day-to-day of Philip Morgan. That man is a force of nature.
Few of us could.
Indeed. No, like, there are a couple of things. Like, and I think this is kind of like the discovery that every user of Copilot or AI is going to have to come to terms with, is like, what matters to me? Because I don't use every single feature. Like, I'm a real stickler for working with PowerPoints. I make a lot of presentations, but I actually think it's kind of fun to sort of fiddle with like alignments and stuff, like making things look nice. So I'm not going to necessarily use Copilot as much in like all of the features in there, but there are some things that, I mean, I mentioned the follow button, right? Like that was, I'd been waiting for that thing like since I got Copilot, because
I wasn't aware of that one. Tell us more about that.
I'm not going to promise you, but yeah. I bet you if you hover over a meeting in Outlook right now, you should be able to see an RSVP option for yes, no, and follow. So I don't know how many of us get booked, parallel booked on meetings, or you get looped into meetings where it's like, I may be not the most important person to be on this thing, but it would be cool to see what they're discussing.
Yeah.
So follow sends Copilot to that meeting. So it's going to transcribe things. You can ask questions of it.
That's fascinating to me. I've got to share with you an insight. I had a conversation with my team this morning. We were saying, like, most organizations feel as though there's probably too many meetings, and we're better than most, I've got to say. However, people saying like, I'm sort of interested in what's going on, but only, you know, I'm only 10% needed there. So what you've just talked about here, absolute like a killer feature, isn't it? For like, okay, I don't need to be there, but tell me about what's going on, or give me an overview. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. Or like similar to that, like maybe I'm only relevant to a part of a meeting. Somebody books like an hour and a half, and it's like, well, my speaking slot is 10 minutes and I'm not actually as critical in the rest of it. Or maybe I can't join. Asking Copilot to like, hey, what did I miss in the last 20 minutes? If you have that. So it's sort of like, hey, I can sort of have a back channel chat. I used to have that with my manager, actually, in a previous role. Like, we would have a WhatsApp separately. So I could join a meeting and sort of chat with him. In this case, I could just ask Copilot. It's like, hey, what did I miss? How did this thing land? Did they agree with this, or did they disagree about this? So yeah, like the team stuff is huge. Other things I've used Copilot for, I use it a lot in Excel. Even though it's, I mean, it's still in preview. So I was like, hey, if you call this a preview, then I'm really keen to see what comes next. I did so much Googling before for finding formulas similar to when I was still like writing some web code. I would have to like look up, like, well, what's the, how do you write this? So being able to, it's like, hey, here's a formula. Like in this context, how would I write a formula to calculate this? Gone are the days of having to like pick through individual commas and they're like, what's the proper syntax of this? So that helps. I think it's sort of helped me going back to presentations. I don't use it much in PowerPoint, but I got a good like briefing on storytelling in presentations. It's sort of based off of what I think it's McKinsey that recommend that you should never start a presentation in PowerPoint when you're building it, when you're like designing it out. Like start in Word, because Word is much better at like giving you an overview of what your story is, and then you move to PowerPoint after that. So things like being able to you apply better practices, like, hey, I'm going to start my presentations in Word. I'm going to draft out, maybe even use Copilot to draft out my outline. But then I'm going to take that and build a deck out of that, which I can use Copilot for. And then I have a jumping off point of like, okay, I might throw half of this out potentially because I'm a stickler for my presentations, but it means I don't start something blank. And it means I actually follow a storyline.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole thing. What else? Batching emails is another thing. Like I've finally been able to stop checking my email constantly. I've been able to turn off my notifications and just work with like, here is my email batching time, and being able to use Copilot in that has been really helpful. Cause then it's like, okay, I can have a session. I can sit down, I can check through my emails. I can have Copilot summarize those emails for me. And I'm able to like, okay, done, dusted, ready to move on.
I love those sort of real world examples that you've given us there. So are there any other Copilot prompts that you think our listeners would benefit from? Or let me rephrase that, Eric. Is there anything that Copilot has surprised you with being able to help you with that had never occurred to you before?
I mean, I'm actually not at, again, there's no playbook for this. So I shouldn't be self-conscious about it. I don't write like really engineered prompts on my first attempt. Even though maybe that is the optimum way of doing things, of writing them properly, but like, okay, well, I want you to do this. This is where I want you to look. This is the context for it. And this is what I expect from you. I tend to sort of do it in follow-up more so. Like, so I might start with something and then I sort of ask it to refine. It's like, well, can you give that to me one more time, but like present it to me in table form? But some surprising things have been actually like in the sort of more general Copilot for Work interface. And I've gotten some ideas for prompts online of like, hey, generate like a report for me for tomorrow. Like, what's my day going to be like? What should I keep in mind? What are my follow-ups? And that's a thing where like, oh, well, this isn't super useful to me right now. But if I can just go in and adjust this prompt and tell it's like, well, look, give me a report for the week so far. Look through my email, look through my Teams, look through my my chats, and tell me what I need to follow up on. Make it boldface if I'm directly mentioned, and give it to me in table form, and you just kind of see what you can get out of that. So that was a surprising thing of like, oh, so it can generate tables and it can generate these customized things. So in that sense, it is kind of that, like that. I mean, I could send, if I had an assistant, that's maybe something what I would ask them to do.
Yeah.
Like I was like, hey, summarize what I need to know about this. So that's been really useful.
Something that you just mentioned there, for many, many years, I've been, when you get a really well-crafted, let me rephrase that. When you get a long email from somebody and you can see they've put a lot of effort into the email, but perhaps if you're anything like me, Eric, I'm a bullet point guy. I want to know, like, what is it you're asking? Let's get, you know, give me the options, away we go. And for many years, I've been asking, you know, my PA, Karina or others, saying like, you know, perhaps I've got a long email from you, Eric. What is it Eric's asking me here? How can I actually deal with that?
Yeah.
So you're finding that Copilot is able to do that on the fly for you, to literally look at an email and say, tell me what this person's thinking, feeling, what actions they want me to take.
Yeah. Or I mean, I thought you were going to say, like, when somebody kindly loops you into a very long running email conversation.
Yes, indeed.
And very graciously asks you to give input on that email conversation, but doesn't see it fit to provide you with any context.
Yeah, based on the last 16 emails that we've had back and forth. What's your thoughts on this, Eric?
We all love this, right? I mean, nobody has ever ever had that problem. But yeah, so that's a problem that has pretty much been solved now, thankfully. That said, it doesn't prevent me from feeling a little bit annoyed when it does happen, because it's like, yes, I know you know that I have Copilot. You could still like tell me a little bit about what you want out of me in this.
Well, maybe we as humans will get better with our email etiquette and things.
Maybe so, right?
These things. So yeah. We can only hope. So
I mean, that's one of the things too. Like, I mean, I'm finding that I do sometimes put more thought into things that I do now that I have sort of lowered the threshold for getting into them.
Yeah.
I actually got into Excel a bit earlier than this, but I can only imagine, like, hey, if I had access to something like Copilot that meant that it wasn't as daunting to get into things, maybe I would have been like a much more well-rounded professional earlier on. Maybe I wouldn't have avoided certain things that I could have gotten into quite easily, but it's like, oh, that's so hard, or it's such a like cognitive load on me to do this.
Yeah.
To like, I know I'm gonna have to, like, if I'm gonna like reference two Excel sheets together, I'm gonna have to like find a way to work out a formula to reference one against the other. And it's like, oh well, in this case I can just ask. Maybe that gets you into like, actually it's kind of fun to do this kind of analysis, and maybe I should get into it a bit more.
Yeah. It's something you mentioned earlier, which I'm in total agreement on. You were talking about PowerPoint. You shouldn't really start a presentation within PowerPoint. Mm. You know, and I've always been taught, and I've done a lot of training with, you know, the best people in our industry and beyond, teaching me how to be a better presenter.
Mm.
And part of that starts with the preparation for the presentation. And so I literally started out on flashcards. You know, you put the ideas, yeah, you move them around. You mentioned, you know, Microsoft Word or whatever. But unless you've been taught that, it's a big skill to learn, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I can see a whole generation of people perhaps who would never have done presentations and stuff before, because it's too big a nut to crack and to learn how to do this. Well, you ask Copilot, hey, I'm about to give a presentation on this topic. Where would you suggest I begin? And it's going to say to you, well, you create an outline and away you go. So I'm with you, you know, whether it's coding, presenting, many of the other skills that have to be acquired within our industry and beyond, I think Copilot's going to be a real enabler, a bridge to these things.
Yeah, you actually reminded me of something I did see. Like, you asked about like what uses have I seen this. I haven't done this myself. I don't think I'd be brave enough to do it. But I have had a colleague be thrown into a meeting where he had to present something in the next like 15 minutes, and he was able to use Copilot to put together a presentation in like 10 minutes. So it's, wow, like, okay, I just need something. I need something based off of this. I needed to reference this thing. Throw out half of these slides. I'm going to use these five. Let's go. I was like, okay, wow. It's like you've got a thing. We got images and stuff. And compared to going up there with like a blank screen and no visual aids, that's pretty brave, but that it works.
Yeah, I'm desperate to see your colleague's presentation now, your friend's presentation, but maybe that's a story for another day. So
maybe, yeah.
I want to address the elephant in the room here. So we've talked about all of the great stuff that AI can do to help us. And I'm not necessarily going negative here, but there's increasing concerns, isn't there, all around the world about data privacy, security. Yeah. So how does Microsoft Copilot, in your experience, ensure compliance and protecting clients' data? Because that's going to be a big question mark for MSPs when they're speaking to clients.
I mean, it is. Some people overlook this, and it's not necessarily helped by some of the like prerequisites for Copilot being lowered. I mean, we're still very much of the opinion that, like, hey, if you're going to get into Copilot, you should at least be on like business premium for this. Not to get too much into the weeds of licensing, but really it's about like, do you even have access to the tool set to manage who has access to what, and who, like, what data you have, and like where that is made available. It is a potential pitfall, but as with a lot of these pitfalls, like it comes with quite a significant silver lining, doesn't it? Because if you are willing to provide a solution for that problem for your clients, it's like, yes, you do not have full data awareness. Let's be real. No, who does? Right? Which organization has? No, okay, we have everything nailed down. We know exactly where everything is, and nobody has access to things they shouldn't. But have that as a jumping off point to like, well, if we are going to get you, quote unquote, AI ready, let's do this properly. And you can use things like restricted SharePoint search as a way of like, oh, this is like, I think Microsoft described it as like, this is a Band-Aid. This is a thing where you can say like, oh, Copilot, you're only allowed to access this one thing or these two things or these 10 things because we know they're safe. There's nothing in here that's sensitive. But you can have that temporarily, so you don't pull the handbrake. That's the other thing here. Like you could sort of kill the conversation by just like, we need to get you 100% data secure before you're even allowed to touch Copilot. That is not the case, but you should use something like restricted SharePoint search, and that's just a feature in there. But in parallel with that, it would be a shame to not take that opportunity. It's like, well, we will provide you a service to get this stuff in order. We will make sure you have structure on your data. And moving on in terms of like, hey, what kind of conversations do you want to have with your customer further on? If you're willing to go into like, hey, we are the enabler of you getting insights and action out of your data, good luck getting rid of us, because without us, you're like, everything stops working.
Yeah, it's a complete mindset change, isn't it, for some MSPs? Yeah. On about, you know, not to over egg the pudding on this one, but we were talking about moving from being the IT guy to being that, you know, well-worn phrase, the trusted advisor.
Yeah.
But these are big conversations, isn't it? Because there's lots of clients out there who have got data scattered everywhere, and without even knowing it, they've not got the right privileges and security practices in place. You can't just slap AI on top of that and go, right, only allow the people we want to see the things that we want, because it really isn't a magic wand, is it? You've got to do that data sanitization first.
Indeed. Yeah. And like it can be done in parallel, thankfully, but it is something that you should do regardless. Because I mean, you could keep restricted SharePoint search on. It's like, well, Copilot can only see the stuff that I can see and not access anything in SharePoint, or can't access anything that's like broadly shared or made available in my company. But you kind of hamstringing yourself in that case of like what you can get out of it in the long run. Because the really exciting use cases, I think, are the ones that are like, well, we just have, if you have data set up well and you're just able to reference all the knowledge that you have as an organization at once, then it's like, okay, then you're unlocking some of the heavier stuff here.
I know that congratulations are in order, Eric. You passed your Microsoft certification in Azure AI recently, so congrats on that.
Thank you.
What was the process like, and what other sorts of certifications are Microsoft offering in this field of AI?
I mean, I'll be honest. I'm expecting there to land more of this fairly soon. I think there are. I just looked recently, and a number of these are listed as undergoing maintenance. So I think I don't know. This is me speculating, but I think we're about to see some more stuff landing fairly soon. But we have the Azure AI Fundamentals. That one's. I'm not going to say it's super easy. It is definitely doable. Some of the parts are going to be a bit more theory heavy, but they're very useful in just kind of like the fundamentals of what AI is. It helps demystify a lot of things. Like it's just maths. It's using maths in a more structured way to make inferences of looking at features, giving it like a label based off of those features, and it sort of helps you understand like, okay, well, this is what, how things sort of fit together. Is it directly applicable to implementing and interacting with specifically Copilot? Not all of it is. It is still very useful, and I would recommend getting into it. Microsoft do these like skill challenges now and then too, where they'll like give you a certification for free sometimes if you complete something within a certain amount of time. But yeah, that one's doable within maybe a couple of days honestly. Really good sort of foundation for having AI discussions and being a bit more like prepared for some of the questions that might come your way. There's the Azure Engineer Associate, I think it's called. I haven't done that one myself, but that's another one that goes a bit more deeper, I would assume, into how to provision Azure AI services. We haven't really been gonna open that can of worms here today, have we? But kind of more so the Copilot end of things. I think those, and there's a bunch of other as we've mentioned previously, Richard, like there's other opportunities here with security, with data management, with Microsoft Fabric, in terms of other Microsoft 365 things that sort of spin off very easily from conversations that are driven around Copilot. So certifying yourself around security and data and Fabric and stuff is going to be pretty useful.
I think we're barely even scratched the surface of what's going on here. And I don't just mean you and I in this conversation, Eric, but society as a whole. And it managed service. So you've got an open invite, my friend. I have loved this conversation. Would you come back very soon and talk to us more about AI as this sort of story develops?
Oh, happy to, Richard.
I would love that. Looking forward, what are some of the enhancements or sort of features in Microsoft AI tools that you're excited about, that MSP should be excited about?
Yeah, so it's worth keeping an eye on what gets announced at like the big conferences. If you haven't watched What's Up Build, go watch the Build keynotes and the videos from there. You've probably heard of GPT-4o and like the video based kind of more live chat, the thing maybe a lot of us envisioned when we heard about Copilot and generative AI and such. It's now becoming more of a reality. It's not announced on the roadmap yet, but it's confirmed that we will be getting more like live video, live voice interaction with Copilot. We'll be getting screen sharing of like, hey, I can just share my screen with Copilot and have it sort of give me feedback or input on what I'm seeing. That's really cool. We mentioned the follow button. That is now a reality, thankfully. So that's we have that. I wasn't able to see this on the roadmap, but I've heard mentioned from several places that a sound like me feature may be coming. Looking at your tonality, like this is how I usually write chats, or this is how I usually write emails. That's sort of dealing with some of the opinions that people have of like, well, this doesn't quite sound like my tonality. If it can solve that, it's going to be pretty good. And I mean, again, just looking at Build, there's a whole lot of stuff. I mean, I've talked about this as an assistant, but they're already sort of pulling the rug out from under my feet of like, no, it's not just an assistant. We're going to make Copilot a team member, and we're going to make it an agent. So that's more like a bit less specific, but like in terms of being able to interact with it as an independent team member is going to be really cool.
Yeah.
What else was it built? Oh, extensibility. So being able to not only build your own extensions to Copilot, like its own skills, but being able to just acquire those. I don't know if they would be something I assume they would be paid for in a lot of cases, but if you can buy something that's specialized, like this is a skill set that's specialized in this field that I can use, that turns it from more of a generally useful thing to like, oh no, this is something that genuinely helps me in this specific thing I didn't think it was capable of.
Yeah, I'm really interested with Microsoft's vision of Copilot being a team member. I've got to say, on the surface, it looks a bit like, but actually, you know, how many times of all of us in the MSP industry, when we've been asked something by friends, by family, and you want to say to them, shall I Google that for you? You know, that obvious one of, have you actually tried to help yourself? Well, I can really imagine having, you know, Copilot as a team member is somebody that you can speak to in real, you know, plain English, go to them, whatever language, ask them a question, and they're going to go within your organization and give you the data that you need or the answer that you need. So I'm really bullish on that. I think it's a great idea.
Definitely. I agree.
Yeah. Well, as we close, I want to ask you one final question. You know, I know you've only been in the role for a few months now, but can you share any success stories with us where MSPs you've worked with have significantly improved their service delivery by using Copilot? And of course, Eric, anonymize, you know, unless the individuals involved or the MSPs want to be named. But I'm really interested, what have you seen out there in the real world?
Yeah, I mean, as mentioned, anybody who says they're like, oh, we have fully completed the life cycle of a Copilot deal here is probably maybe not being 100% honest here. But like, there are some things that I see MSPs doing that my qualified guess is that it is going to be very, very influential and beneficial for them. And that's things like starting off and actually having a proper discussion internally, like, well, how do we see ourselves, like, what role do we see ourselves playing in this in maybe like 5 years' time? Like, what role is AI going to play in what we do? Like, what kind of things are we willing to provide? Because now that we know that it's going to require maybe some different kinds of services for us to provide, maybe we're going to be providing more trainings. Maybe we're going to be providing more workshops and a different kind of delivery than we normally would. So looking at that, and if you are betting on this, and like putting a team together, it can be a team of one, but and you can build from there. But like, no, this is a person who is going to work with this stuff. And you may find that there are other benefits from that. So like, if you have somebody who's on delivering workshops with customers, what's to say they can't apply the insights from that to delivering workshops around other technology as well? So there are benefits to that. I think building an offering, maybe like building your own stuff, you don't have to go down the full route of like, oh, I'm going to build an app from scratch. But what can I provide my customers that feels very custom? I've seen people take the ideas of like Prompt Buddy or app data, prompt databases. Like, well, how can we build a simple interface around this that feels really custom? That makes our customers feel like they have things under control and that we are sort of holding their hand. Because I think that's the thing, right? It comes down to, as we said, like, what are you selling? You're not necessarily selling Copilot as such. Maybe you're not even selling AI as such, but what are you selling in terms of like peace of mind, in terms of we as a company, as a client, may be worried that we're slipping behind the competition because we're not leveraging AI enough. So like, if you can sell them the peace of mind, say, no, we're keeping you up to date. It doesn't have to be like we're calling you every day and it's like, have you heard? Here's the latest thing. But we have a thing in place where you know that as part of this service, we are going to keep you abreast of what's happening. It can be as simple as sending them a newsletter or something, but just something where they can like, oh, okay, nice. I can take this off of my mind and I can focus on other stuff.
Yeah. Copilot coffees. I think we can all swipe that idea, steal it with integrity and pride from everyone.
Definitely. Yes,
use that. If I was an MSP, I would be introducing Copilot coffees with all of my clients as part of their contracts as a value add.
Yeah.
Just to keep them. Yeah, it's brilliant. Well, I've got to say, Eric, the ISV industry's loss is the MSP space's gain with you joining us in the managed service provider space. So I'm so glad you've sort of come on board and shared some of your wisdom and insights into this, you know, it's embryonic at the moment, isn't it? This field of artificial intelligence and seeing where it's going. We're going to have MSPs listening today, some of which are going to be Pax8 partners. I'd like you perhaps to point them in the direction of if they want to engage with Pax8 and find out more. But we're also going to have people who are not Pax8 partners from all over the world. So perhaps whether they're Pax8 partners or non-partners, you know, how would they engage with Pax8 to find out more?
Yeah, so I think regardless of who you are, like we are going to want to be supporting you. And like the whole idea with Pax8 is like, we don't just want to like provide you with a thing to sell. Like, we actually want to have a conversation with you about like, well, what's your business model around this? And like, how can you best turn this into something that's profitable and something that actually solves problems for your customers? So I think just sort of getting in touch, there's quite a bit of stuff on our website around AI. We have a lot of activities coming up. We have Pax8 Beyond, which is going to be really interesting. Maybe that's not the best jumping off point. I think it's like, just get in touch with us and just kind of see like, well, what do we have around AI that's coming up? I can, without spoiling too much, we are going to be seeing a fair number of things that are going to be very hands-on, which I think is kind of what a lot of people need. Even though you should be doing your own thing, having something as just a thing to start out with, as we mentioned with Copilot, not starting with a blank page. Like, hey, if somebody's telling me to run a workshop, for example, like, what does this workshop look like?
Yeah.
So just to give you an idea of things we have coming up. So I would definitely say say get in touch with us and see how we can help you around AI, and we will be sharing a fair number of things very soon.
Well, for the benefit of listeners, whether you're out walking your dog, listening to this in the car, chilling out with it, whatever it might be, don't worry about scribbling down all of the multitude of resources that Eric and I have mentioned. We'll put them all into the show notes. So go to tublog.co.uk. And in terms of Eric, in terms of the PAX 8 resources, we've actually put together a page, tub.co/PAX8, which includes, well, it'll include this interview and everything else that goes with it. So yeah, so we're getting good at doing this. We're getting good at how we disseminate that info. And interestingly, I'm going to say to Gudrun, who does our podcast show notes afterwards, I'm going to say, are we using AI to pull together these show notes? Because I'd be really interested to see what Copilot makes of our conversation and how it pulls out all the resources that we've done there. So maybe I'll report that next time you and I speak on air. We'll have a look back and see how Copilot did with the show notes for this episode as well.
Yeah, we'll have a second guest on then, I assume.
In a way, right? Well, there's going to be some people listening as well, Eric, you know, who want to continue the conversation with you in person. What's the best way for them to find you online?
Sure. You might not remember my full last name as you search on, let's say, LinkedIn. You can find my LinkedIn profile on ericostland.com. It makes it a lot easier. Or if you're on LinkedIn, you can just search for Eric PAX 8 AI, and you will see me as one of two AI Erics on there. Pick the one that has the more complicated last name, and you will find me.
Well, Eric, this has been an absolute thrill speaking to you. I could talk to you for ages. I get the feeling you could talk, about this for a long time as well.
So don't get me started. We'll be here.
We must do this again soon for a second part, because this industry is moving so fast, and you are an absolute expert in it, my friend. So thanks for sharing so openly with myself and with the audience today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Richard. It's been a pleasure.
Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tublog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback.